Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded, and at this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Rex Simmons. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to today's WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. My name is Rex Simmons, and I will be the moderator for this call. This call is being recorded, and within 24 to 48 hours, an MP3 file and presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site, so you may replay it at your convenience. If you have not yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. An e-meeting URL is available to you and your WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. If you are unable to access the e-meeting at this time, you may access the presentation from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site or by going to any IBM.com site and typing in the document number 7007102 in the search box in the black section at the very top of the page. You may also instant message the co-moderator, Christy Snyder, by clicking on Christy Snyder, Toronto IBM, at IBM.ca in the e-meeting attendee list, and she will assist you. Today's presenters are Magda Matuszewski and Coley Mungie. They are currently both working on WebSphere Application Server for ZOS L2 support. Magda has been with WebSphere support for 4.5 years and Coley for 3.5 years. Besides the defect support and they provide, they also spend a significant time analyzing performance problems with many customers coming with. They advise and help customers to improve performance and tune their WebSphere environment. Today's topic is debugging a performance issue with a WebSphere application server for ZOS. It will include a PowerPoint presentation followed by a question and answer session. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, the lines will be opened for a question and answer period. If you are in the e-meeting, you will see the presentation at this point. I would like to turn the presentation over to Magda and Coley at this time.
Thanks, Rex. This is Magda Matuszewski. I'll start with the presentation and Coley will jump in later on. So let's go to the agenda page. This presentation is really written from WebSphere Level 2 support perspective. What we notice, the customer come in with different performance problems. We have some WebSphere specific settings that we wanted to let you know about, maybe clarify some of them if you, maybe they are not as intuitive as we were hoping they would be, and go through some timeouts also, how timeouts are related to performance. We'll go through one example of an RMF report to point out things that you might be that might be of interest. We'll also look at some GVM consideration and some miscellaneous things. Mostly, we're listing some APARs that might be of interest to you. So let's go to next page. So we're going to start with WebSphere settings. Specific to performance. Next page. The first setting that I wanted to mention is application reloading. What I mean by application reloading is with version 5 and up, we have the ability where you can deploy the application while the application server is running. And you can deploy part of the application, full application, and the server will detect that there are some changes to the application and use the new version of the application. For that, you need the application reloading to be enabled. And the only problem is that the checks that are being made to check if the there are some changes to the application, it's an HFS access. We're checking on the files, were they updated. And there are... So there are two settings. You can set reload enabled. You can either enable it or disable, true or false. And then you set the interval. Zero means it's disabled. And then you can see, set any number of seconds. The confusing part is that there are actually two places that you can update the reload enabled setting. One is the IBM web.ext.xmi file. This is specifically for web modules only. And the other one is our WebSphere admin console. The update will result in the deployment of that XML file. And this is for EJB modules. Whatever you set in admin console, sorry, change of slide. Yeah, when you set something in admin console, when you set it to reload enabled false, we will take a look at that XMI file and see what's out there and apply those changes to. If you set the reload enabled in admin console to true, it will overwrite what's in the XMI file. But I'll clarify it in a second. So let's go to the next slide. So these are two places that I just mentioned. The first one is the admin console, and you'll see this panel if you follow that path, and the two fields to update. And then the second bullet shows the XMI file where normally you will set it in WSAD or whatever tool you use to develop your application, and it comes with your application. Next slide, please. So I just wanted to go through some examples of those settings, you know, to clarify how they work. If you want to turn off the reloading altogether, so we won't do any checks in the HFS for any new applications, for any new changes to the applications, you can simply change in the admin console, change the reload enabled set to true, which enables the reloading, but you set the interval to zero. This is, anytime you set the reload enabled to true in the admin console, we don't care anymore what's in XMI file. So this way, you are disabling the hot deployment, which is the deploying application while the server is running. The second bullet is if you want to set it to, let's say, 30 minutes or whatever the interval is you think is good for you. Again, I would say don't even touch XMI file. Just set the reload enabled to true in the admin console, set the interval to appropriate value. And then the third bullet is really what we have as a default. The default in the admin console is that the reload enabled is set to false, which means we will look at the XMI file. If you use WSAD to develop your application, the default in WSAD is to set the reloading enabled to true and the interval to 3, which means 3 seconds. So every 3 seconds, we are going to access HFS and check if there are any changes. So in a development environment like WSAD, this is what you might want. In a production, you don't deploy applications as often, so you might want to change that. The default is not appropriate for production environment. Next slide. This is another setting that also can cut down on some CPU usage. This is actually a setting that is already in effect as a default in version 6. There is no reason why you would not want to have it in version 5 or 5.1. If you set it to true, what it means is that we have an alarm manager which takes care of different alarms that we generate and so on, and it makes sure all the alarms are caught and so on. If the server is idle, there is no reason for the alarm manager to be active. So this variable if the server is not active, doesn't do any work, the alarm manager is going to be in a sleep mode, quiet mode, and will not be activated. This is only true for the servant regions, not the controller. The controller needs the alarm manager to be active. Next slide, please. There are other things you can do from the controller point of view to reduce the CPU overhead. And these are a few things that you can take a look. One, the first bullet is the ping interval. This is really the node agent checking on the application servers. Are they up? Are you alive? Is a live message. How often do you want this message to be? How often do you want the node agent to be checking the application servers? That might be the default 60 seconds, 1 minute might be reasonable. Depends on what you need, how often you need the node agent to detect that the application server is down and take appropriate action. So take a look at this value and see. I can't recommend the values just because this is something that depends on if you're in testing, if you're in production, or whatever environment you're running in. The next bullet is logstream compression interval. If you don't use logstream, you probably can just disable the compression. There is no reason for you to even invoke this function. If you are using it, maybe increasing the value, the interval, is appropriate too. And the third bullet is synchronization interval. How often do you want us to check to synchronize the servers in the node? This is not the same as if you do make change in the admin console and you also issue the synchronize with the master configuration and so on, that's different. What we're talking here is the automatic synchronization. The default is 10 minutes. So every 10 minutes, we will attempt to synchronize with the master configuration, make sure that everything is in sync. Next slide, please. As you know, the WebSphere uses WLM. From the controller, work goes into WLM. WLM decides where to place the work. If you're running with more than one servant, that's really the slide is for when you're running with multiple servants. There are cases where the work that you're running on the server requires a lot of affinity. The way WLM works, it will attempt to assign the work, the new request to the one servant that is still available to take the work, and it doesn't distribute the work evenly. It doesn't really know about min max that we have set in our WebSphere environment for min SRS and max SRS. So what it does is tries to place as much work on one servant only in an attempt to bring down the extra unnecessary servants. What the problem with my cause, if you have a lot of affinity, and let's say the first five requests that came in require affinity, the WLM will direct them to this first servant. And even the next time when the work comes in again and the first servant is really busy, the work should really be going to the second servant. But because of affinity, WLM cannot place it. There has to wait for that first servant to be ready to accept that work, which might cause some queuing delays, WLM queuing delays, because we have to wait for this one servant. So we have the variable that WLM stateful session placement on, and the way it will work, it does work if you have it set it to one, is that WLM will look how many affinities are each servant has currently, and if it will try to redistribute the work so each servant has even number of affinities, which doesn't mean that all the work is redistributed evenly. It's more affinity work is redistributed evenly between servants. Next slide, please. This really didn't change much since version 4. I would hope you know it already, but just to point out, you can run with different number of threads. It depends on the setting you choose. Pay attention to number of threads. You can run with 40, up to 40 threads, but that doesn't mean it might be beneficial to you because it's more threads. If it's CPU intensive and you have only two CPUs, it might not be feasible to run 40 threads for you. But then if there is a lot of weight, then probably 40 threads might be good. On the other hand, you might want to also consider multiple servants. Because what happens if you have 40 threads running in the servant, there is only one JVM. JVM needs to do garbage collections. Every time the garbage collection is started, it needs to quiescent all the threads, which means none of the threads can do any work because we're in a garbage collection, so there is a pause there. If you have multiple servants, that garbage collection is done for each servant at different times, so you don't have this idle time when the garbage collection happens. So just this one thing I wanted to point out. Next slide. There is more WebSphere settings, and at this point I'll hand it over to Coeli.
Thanks, Magda. Can we go to the next slide, please? So we wanted to talk about some JDBC connection pool settings. Very often you have cases where your application connects to a database like DB2 and you need a JDBC data source configured. The connection wait timeout and the max connection are properties on the connection pool for the data source. The connection wait timeout is it's the time that the server will wait for a connection to become free from the connection pool or to create a new connection. And you want this value to be less than the server timeout values like the HTTP or MDB or WLM timeout values so that in case you do have a connection wait timeout, your servant doesn't abend. So make sure that this is set to less than these values so that you can, it'll just be an exception rather than the entire servant abending and causing delays. The max connection for the connection pool is it's a servant setting, so it's per servant. It's good to have this setting set to the number of worker threads in your servant so that in the case where all the threads in the servant require a connection and are concurrently processing, they all have a connection and don't have to wait for something to get freed up from the connection pool. Next slide, please. This is just a slide that, you know, talks about where to set these values on the connection pool for the data source. So we can move on to the next slide. Okay, so in the case that your applications use MDBs, for WebSphere for ZOS, there's a value called a throttle value that needs to be considered. When the MDB requests come into the controller, they're, you know, since this is ZOS, they go to WLM first and WLM sends it to the servant. What happens is, in the case that there's a large number of messages on the message queue, the servant can get flooded with maybe thousands or more requests at a time. So we need a throttle value to control this. What value, an appropriate value to choose, you need to consider some other settings. So the throttle value pretty much, once the controller accepts this number of MDB requests, it'll stop accepting, and it'll wait until the requests are processed by the servant and it falls to a certain threshold, which is the throttle divided by two. So the values you need to think about before coming up with an appropriate throttle value are things like the number of worker threads in your servant, the max connection setting for your connection factory under the session pool that your MDB listener port uses, and the MDB listener port max sessions, which is your actual throttle. And we'll talk more about this in the next slide. So once you've chosen the number of servants configured for the application server and you know the number of worker threads per servant, you need to decide how many worker threads per servant you want to dedicate to MDB work. That's controlled by the max connection settings for the session pool. If you set this to the number of threads in the servant, then you have all the servant threads available for MDB work, but you can limit it using this setting. So once you have these values, you can start to come up with a throttle value, which should be set to at least the number of servants multiplied by your max connection setting, or your number of threads per servant, I said in this case, but if it's equal to the max connection, then the max connection setting. That should be the minimum, because that ensures that each request will be picked up in case there's concurrent requests. Now, you may want to think about a backlog factor, because you want to have some requests ready to go while the other ones are processing. So I talk more about this in the next slide. So if you don't have a backlog factor, what happens is, let's say your throttle value is X. You receive X number of MDB requests and process them, and the controller stops accepting any requests after that number. If you have a multiple, then you have some requests ready to go when these complete, the ones that are executing complete. So an example would be 2, and you would just multiply your value that you came up with by that factor, like 2. So this is an example. You would probably need to tune and test your application to see what works well in your environment. Next slide, please. Now we wanted to talk about some timeouts, how some EC3s could affect your performance, EC3 timeouts in WebSphere. Next slide. Okay, so when the server receives an EC3-04-13000 ABAN reason code that indicates that a timeout has occurred, we ABAN the server region. Using IPCS, you can analyze what happened, why the thread timed out, what it was doing when it timed out. The TechNote reference given here gives some hints for analyzing timeouts. So once you go through the analysis and you see that it could be that all the threads were processing fine, there weren't any delays in any one particular thread. And in that case, you need to probably look at your WLM settings. So the second bullet talks about that. The IP verbex CB data command given here is an IPCS command that tells you when the request came into the control region, when it was sent to WLM, and when it was sent to the servant region from WLM. So if you see big delays in WLM, the request sitting in WLM for a while, that's a good indication that there could be a WLM setting problem. It could be that your WLM goal is not set high enough, and the RMF records can help you verify that. You can look at the goals and see if you met the goals. Another setting to consider is the WLM critical attribute, and in the speaker notes I gave reference to where you can find more information on that. Next slide, please. So these are two cases where the server initialization delays cause EC3 timeouts. The first case is when the server initially comes up, server startup, and the second case is when you may have an EC3 or some other reason why the servant went down. In that case, it could cause delays. And I'm going to talk about this in the next couple of slides. Next slide, please. So the first case is when the server first comes up. You could have application requests coming into the controller before the servant initializes. And in that case, but the timer starts when the request is received into the controller. So as soon as the servant starts up, you can receive EC3's, you know, timeouts causing delays. So one way to prevent this is to consider the protocol accept HTTP work after min SRS variable. When this variable is set to true, it tells the controller not to accept any HTTP requests before the minimum number of servants are initialized or open for business. The only thing to note here is if you have your WLM minimum SR count set to something higher than 1, like 5, the controller won't accept any requests until all 5 servants are up and available. So that's something to consider. Next slide. The next case is when, for some reason, for an EC3 or some other reason, that your servant goes down and you don't have any servants available. The application requests still come in and the timers are still running. This environment variable, which was introduced in version 5.1, and it's also in version 6, control region confirm recovery on no SRS. When this is set to true, the controller will not accept any application requests until the minimum number of servants are back up and running. What we had on the previous slide was only for server initialization. This is as opposed to this case, which is when the controller is still up, right. Next slide, please. So we just wanted to go through one RMF example, which is on the next slide. Some of the important fields are circled that we're going to talk about. So I'm going to refer back to this, but next slide. So the APPL percent, which was circled in the right of the previous page, this talks about how much the percent of the single processor needed to drive the workload in the interval. So in this case, it was 1.5 processors were needed to drive this workload. The number of transactions that completed in the interval are given by the AVG, the MPL, and since every transaction in WebSphere for ZOS causes an enclave to be created, also the average enclave number is also equal to these two numbers. Next slide, please. The transaction time the actual time here is sum of the execution time and the queued. The queued time here refers to the WLM queue time, the time that the request was in WLM. The WLM goal that was set in this example, it was 80% to complete in 0.25. And in this case, the performance index is less than 1, which indicates that we're doing better than the goal and we completed the goal. The actual was 100%, which means 100% completed in this interval. If you do have execution delays, which is usually when your goal is not met, you'll see some execution delays, and this is only displayed if you have them. Queuing, QMPL, paging, operator, and crypto. The queuing QMPL is the queue time, the WLM queue time that was spent for the request. And Chapter 5 in the RMF book that we gave here has reference to this, more information on this. Next slide, please. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Magda again to talk about the JVM considerations.
Okay, next slide, please. The dash X quick start variable, we've documented it in a few places. I just wanted to clarify how this variable works. The way we document it is that you will see 15 to 20% improvement in application server startup. So that sounds pretty good. But however, there is a trade-off. Because we sped up the server startup, this was achieved by compiling methods at the lower degree of optimization. This variable causes another thread, a pprop manager thread. It's a pooling profiler thread. It's going to be active in the server, and it just makes sure it verifies that certain methods that might not have been compiled, they are going to be compiled. And fortunately, it causes CPU. The CPU usage is increased because of this pprop manager thread during the runtime of the server. There is one way to disable that pprop manager threads by setting that GC compile opt equal to np pooling, third bullet. However, I mean, you still have extra CPU cycles because we do have to compile, do some JIT compiles on the methods that we haven't done the compiles. So while the dash X quick start variable speeds up the server startup, it might reduce some performance during the server runtime. Next slide. Another big thing that we see customers run into is the heap fragmentation. The ultimate result of the heap fragmentation is Java out of memory, which terminates the servant. What it means is that while you might have enough space in total to allocate objects, you need the contiguous space to really satisfy the request for that object. If you don't have it, and we are not able, JVM is not able to do whatever it needs to do compilation or whatever it is that it needs to do, and it still cannot give you that space, it will issue the Java out of memory exception. And extra things that JVM is trying to do to find that space, they cause performance degradation. That means that GC cycle is going to be longer. It will use extra paging and CPU, and it will make your servant, the GC cycles are going to be longer, which means that the server will not be processing the regular work. And you can read more about avoiding fragmentation in the Java diagnostic guide that's referenced here. Next slide. So let's just take a quick look at the GC trace. It gives you quite a few good information. The way to enable it is if you look at the notes, speaker notes, I'll give you some information how to enable it if you're not aware of it. Just a side note, for every slide we pretty much have here, we try to clarify certain settings where to set them in the speaker notes. So you might want to go to the PDF document that's published and look at those speaker notes as well. So let's look at the fields that are circled here. Let's go to the next slide. So the first field that I was looking at is what's the object size that was requested? And in this case, it's actually a 17 megabyte object. It's a big object. The first thing I would ask, is that application that's requesting that 17 megabyte object really needs this much, should really be asking for this much, and it might be the application issue. Why is it asking for that big object? Because if you allocate fewer of those objects in a heap, it's much easier to have a fragmented heap, just because how you can't really move these big objects too much. You might run out of space quite quickly. So the next bullet, number two, it's compact, is just showing you if the GC cycle goes through the compaction phase, which means we're trying to move some objects around, the ones that we can, and provide more contiguous space for allocating bigger objects. And if the compaction is run, again, it's extra time spent in a GC cycle. There are some objects that are called pinned objects. I think I mentioned it on a previous slide. They cannot be moved, and again, the Java Diagnostic Guidebook talks about them as well, how to best avoid them. Next slide, please. The next thing in the GC trace is how much JVM heap space we have left. In this case, we actually have 45% of the heap available, which means in this case, it's 293 megabytes that's available. If you remember from the previous slide, the request we had was for 71 megabyte object. So we should be able to allocate this much space within the free space that's shown here. However, just because we did get a lot of memory, that's a really good indication that your heap is fragmented and JVM was not able to find the contiguous enough space to allocate this object. So let's go to the next slide. Another thing to look at is also how much exactly is it that you're spending in garbage collection. Like I said before, all the work is stopped when GC starts. So you might want to look at it, what's the GC overhead. I give you the formula here, and if GC overhead is, the rule of thumb is less than 5%. I usually see it even less than that, around 1% even. So, but less than 5%, it should be okay. Anything more than that, you might want to look into it. Why is it that we're spending so much time in GC? Next slide. If you don't want to use the formula that I gave you before in a previous slide, there are some tools available. One of them is GC Collector. It is available for free from AlphaWorks. It's a GUI interface. It gives you some graphs to show you what's going on. This is really like a sample screenshot to show you how it looks like. There is more to it. And I would have you just take a look at this and I think you might find it helpful. Next slide. Next slide, please. The miscellaneous stuff. We didn't talk about application-specific performance. So if you have some problems with the applications, you might want to use those type of tools that to really analyze your applications. This presentation is not really geared towards how to diagnose the performance issue within your application. So there's a list. IBM Tivoli Performance Viewer is shipped with WebSphere, and it is for free in WebSphere version 6. It's even built in into the admin console. It should be easier to use. Next slide. The following, I'm not going to go into details, it's really a list of APARs that we thought might be related to, they should be related to some performance, they cause some performance impact. So you might want to look at your system, what level you are at, and make sure you have those APARs applied. So just go through the list, depending on what version you are at, different APARs for the same problem for different versions. Next slide. More APARs, I'll let you go through it on your own. Next slide. Next slide, please. Okay, so reference is what we used, mostly InfoCenter. There is a lot of good documentation in InfoCenter. While some of that is confusing, we are trying to improve it, and there is available information. And mostly, whatever settings we talked about today, you can go back to the InfoCenter and you'll find it and find descriptions and those settings as well. The one thing that I did want to point out of this list is the second bullet for the white papers, diagnosing performance problem with WebSphere application servers on ZOS. this is a very short document, but it's really condensed list or even a checklist, things to look at. Not even, it's even outside of, WebSphere configuration. Things to look at and check if you have it set. There are no detailed step-by-step instructions, but it gives you an idea what to do in, if you have certain, if you see certain problems, performance problems in certain areas, and then you can go from there. But I will recommend you to take a look at this white paper. Next slide. This is just for the information, more extra resources. Next slide. Before we start questions, there is an appendix to this presentation. It's about when you do have performance issues and you're not able to diagnose them on your own and you think this might be something with a WebSphere environment, we're just showing you what we usually ask for the customers to provide us with. So this is kind of give you a better idea of what you should have ready for us so we can provide a quick resolution to and diagnose your problem quicker. So that's it, and I think we can start a question.
Thank you. The question.
At this point, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you do wish to signal for a question, you may do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone phone. Once again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone phone if you do wish to signal for a question. And if you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signals to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 for any questions. And we will come to you in the order that you signal and take as many questions as time permits. Once again, star 1 for any questions, and we'll pause for a moment. And as a final reminder to our phone audience, that is star 1 on your touch-tone phone if you do wish to signal for a question or to make a comment. And at this time, you have no questions standing by on our question roster. I'd like to turn the conference back to our speakers for any additional or closing comments.
I guess if you have any questions, please feel free to email Magda and I.
Yes, our email address is on the first page of the presentation. And thank you for listening.
At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you, and we appreciate the participation. Remember, a replay of the presentation will be available on the IBM WebSphere Technical Exchange site within the next day or two. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will also be announced on this site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Magda and Coley.
Thank you for your participation on today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time.